Aloha.
The person that had the great line, fear is the only thing we have is fear itself.
Busey clearly had recently had sex with a Hawaiian person.
Welcome. We're back from theballerlifestyle.com. It's the Baller Lifestyle Podcast, episode number 375. I'm your host. My name is Brian Beckner. I'm joined as always by Mr. Ed Daly. Ed, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well.
That's good to hear. We are also joined. We're doing a movie today. You guys like when we do movies. You guys like when we do shitty movies that are classic.
We got that covered.
Yeah, it's handled today. We are also joined by a real crowd favorite. Oftentimes, you'll hear him, and then you won't hear him for long periods of time, and then he'll come in, and he'll zing you with a fucking good one. He's a well-known dude. He's got a lot of long-time Twitter followers. Of course, I'm talking about Mr. Jason Stewart. Jason, how are you?
Hello, everybody.
Ooh, long pause.
There you go.
Hey, so I live in a city, and there are police sirens just now. So forgive the activity.
Oh my God, it sounds so shitty when you go to talk.
It's not the sirens. It sounds like you're broadcasting next to FDR for the fireside chat.
It's so, like, apologize to everybody within the sound of my voice. Yeah, it's just whatever Jason is using to connect to his computer just sounds bad.
I think that's it's actually a good reference that Ed just made. If I sound like FDR, I mean, FDR was the person that had the great line, fear is the only thing we have is fear itself.
And that is not the line. Sort of, not even sort close.
Right after Pearl Harbor. And this movie was the 50th anniversary of Pearl Harbor.
The only, I can't even repeat. Well, I know the actual line. I was trying to repeat what Jason said.
I kind of like Jason's version.
It's better.
It's the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's what I said the first time.
No. No. Oh my God. Well, you know, we do lots of good ones. We could throw another one in there.
You got to open the show with that line though.
Yeah. That's a good point. Okay. How's everybody doing? You guys fired up to, talk about Under Siege?
So I really didn't. Usually I try to look up more. I watched a movie last night, but I try to look up what year was this?
I believe 92. Okay.
It was a year before The Fugitive.
Yeah.
Oh, it was before The Fugitive.
Right.
I was really trying to figure out in terms of Tommy Lee Jones what we were working with.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really, I don't know what he had done before, but he was really chewing up the scenery in this one. Like, he was feeling himself. He's like, look, if I'm going to be in this movie, I'm going to fucking act my dick off and really ham it up. And it was not a problem.
I think he was kind of known.
Well, let's take a look. Let's see what he'd done before this. Tommy, I had forgotten he was in it. I saw it.
I think I saw him in an episode of Charlie's Angels, like when he was young.
Yeah. I mean, was he ever young?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Was he, most of his roles, though, that he's well known for are like the understated guy, right? Even like Men in Black.
He played this. Yes, I agree with what you're saying. He played this exactly the same way he played Two-Face in the Jim Carrey Batman when he was the Riddler.
That's true.
He played it the same exact, like over the top.
Over the top.
He played it this. If he was in Two-Face costume, it wouldn't seem any different.
Oh, hold on. So the first, so he worked a lot. He was on, he was on lots of shows like in the 70s. He was on One Life to Live. He broke out, I would say, in the Lonesome Dove. What up, right. Travis Rogers? Miniseries. Then he was in JFK in 91. Right. And that's like the first like real place you would have seen him, followed immediately by his star turn in Under Siege, and then The Fugitive, and then all sorts of shit you've seen him in. The Client, Natural Born Killers. Oh, he played Ty Cobb.
Oh yeah, that was a really boring baseball movie.
That must have been an old ass Ty Cobb.
Yeah, it was boring. Yeah, it was like the dimly lit, boring. Because you know, I was probably in high school. It's like, yeah, baseball movie, Ty Cobb, and it was a lot. I think it was like his old confessions.
Oh, that's right.
It was bad.
Yeah, he was telling it from later in life, right?
Robert
Wool.
I'm gonna talk real fast right now.
Yeah. Okay. So the other big star turn in this, of course, is the guy that plays Tac-Man, Damian Chapa, who everyone will know, of course, as Miklo from Blood In, Blood Out, which is his very next role after this, Bound by Honor, which is a movie we should eventually discuss. Also, what's his name from the program was there?
Oh, yeah. Alvin Mack.
Alvin Mack from the program was there. And, of course, the real heavy in this movie, although it is – they do kind of trade off, is the great Gary Busey and those teeth. He gets punched once in the face.
So much teeth.
He's got so much teeth. He gets punched once in the face, and it was like maybe like the worst facial injury that's ever existed. It's rebandaged constantly throughout. And of course, the great Steven Seagal as Casey Ryback, the ship's cook. Steven Seagal, he's got an interesting story. I believe, let's check his wiki. I believe he was like some producer's. Yeah,
he married like the daughter of the guy who invented Aikido or something. I was looking at his story last night.
Really? Yeah, he's legit. I've heard Joe Rogan talk about this. He's legit. He's a legit martial artist in a martial art that, to quote Joe Rogan, would be good if you had to fight somebody that didn't know how to fight. You know, it's like if you knew this thing and the other person knew nothing, you'd be in good shape. But if the other person knew any other martial art, they would be able to fuck you up very easily.
He moves so slow.
That's his thing. So slow. I know. He moves so slow.
Everything is done slow. The dialogue is done slow. He just walks through his lines. There's no animation whatsoever. No. I didn't see too many of these movies. In fact, I think this was the first time I had seen it. I may have seen it back in the day, but this was the only movie he ever did without a ponytail, right?
That's what I was thinking. That's the first thing I thought. I'm like, how are they going to have a guy in the Navy with a ponytail? But I will say this. Not one single fucking seaman on this ship had a regulation military haircut.
Do you think the Navy was consulted in any way for this movie?
No.
Because I spotted a lot of errors, and I'm not even in the Navy.
Right, and neither am I. We'll go through them. They just let him have the ponytail, and it almost looked like he still had the long hair, and they were like tucking it up under and just trying not to shoot the back of his head, because he did have kind of weird hair, and I get it. He was trying to hold on to it. So that makes sense. I believe the story of Steven Seagal is that he was somebody's like sensei, like a producer or something. And the producer's
I thought maybe some slow moving marauders moved in on a producer and he was able to stop them in slow motion.
With the one martial art he know that's good against people that know no other martial art. He was an Aikido guy. I think his dad was a producer or something. I don't know. He's real bad, but he was a big, if you're our age, he was a big, big, big fucking star in the 1990s when there were all sorts of action franchises going on, right? There was like, it was like peak, like action movie era.
So I think probably like, right, the Schwarzenegger, Predator, Die Hard, like, and Stallone movies, Rambo, like, they just needed more people. And so Jean-Claude got involved.
There was also even a little before that, there was Chuck Norris, right? And then so Chuck Norris is like a kickboxer karate guy. And so they're like, oh no, we got to find dudes that actually know how to fight and we'll use them. And of course, Bruce Lee. So then remember they tried to make Michael Dudikoff? American Ninja? He was doing a thing. Like, there were a lot of these franchises
They also used the 1984 men's Olympic gymnast Mitch Gaylord. To try to.
Gymkhana.
They gave Bosworth a movie too. At least
right. Yes.
Oh, Roddy Piper.
Oh, They Live. Who could forget? Yeah. The Hulkster had some movies too, but he was already famous from another thing. Okay, so Under Siege, this came out in 92, like we said, American action film thriller directed by someone called Andrew Davis. Let's see what else he directed. That's kind of interesting, right?
I can't imagine he was in demand.
No, I mean, no. I feel like he was maybe, he just worked with Seagal. You see that sometimes. Let's see. Oh, no. He directed The Fugitive.
What?
That's what it says here.
That was a real movie.
I know. He directed all the Seagal movies.
He got a good script. And he's like, okay, I'm going to need all of you. All right, so everybody who wants to be in The Fugitive, step forward. Not so fast. Everybody but Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, everybody step. Who didn't step forward? Oh, Tommy Lee Jones. We're gonna use you. That's pretty funny. That's the only other A Perfect Murder. I don't remember. Collateral Damage. Oh, that's a real movie.
I think that's a real movie.
Oh yeah, that's the one. It's the 9/11 one with Schwarzenegger, where they had to like change him to Colombians or something.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking that was the Schwarzenegger Y2K movie. Remember there was like End of Times?
Yes. Oh, man. No, I think you're right. That is the one that was there was one that was like coincided with 9/11 and they had to push it back. John Turturro's in it.
You're right. This is the 9/11 one. Oh, it is. This is 02. It came out. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
End of Days was the Y2K one. That's
right. End of Days. What else? The
1992 was I was trying to think of why I would have missed this movie. And 1992 had some really good movies, like classic movies.
Was there like an I Love Lucy movie?
Other than that, which is going to be a biopic, I think, here pretty soon.
Oh. Yeah, starring Nicole Kidman.
Can't wait to miss it.
After Reservoir they were Dogs.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic. Still my favorite Tarantino movie.
Glengarry Glen Ross, Patriot Games, Batman Returns. I mean, Basic Instinct. There were just a lot of really good movies. I completely missed this movie now that I think about it.
I remember seeing it in the theater, but I had a buddy that worked at a theater. So we would always go see movies, and we were on a Steven Seagal. We were hip to Seagal. We had seen all the Hard to Kills, Marked for Death.
This was 10th on the year, 10th in the box office.
Oh, yeah, this is a massive hit. It made over $100 million.
It was just topped by The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Oh, it's Rebecca De Mornay.
Yeah.
And Annabella Sciorra. That's it's a couple heavy hitters in that one.
But this movie beat Patriot Games, which was Harrison Ford. That's right. Crazy. This movie did really well.
Yeah, it did. It stars Steven Seagal as an ex-Navy SEAL. They let you in on that a little bit later. Who must stop a group of mercenaries led by Tommy Lee Jones on the U.S. Navy battleship Missouri. Released on October 9th, 1992. Under Siege was successful in critical and financial terms, receiving 2 Oscar nominations. Oh, for sound production. Somebody was throwing somebody a bone. Was successful in critical and financial terms. The score, blah blah blah, and they made a sequel. Of course, it made like over 150 million. I think more than 150 million.
It's been called the Die Hard on a Battleship.
Yeah, Die Hard on a boat. That was a thing for a while where they were trying to redo Die Hard.
Right. Yeah. Speed. Die Hard on a bus. They just kept that was the pitch for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, because Die Hard was really a game changer. Here, let's play the trailer, and then we can talk about this piece of shit.
It was the final voyage of America's mightiest battleship.
What's on this helicopter?
This little sweetheart.
Miss July 89.
God, I love this business.
I love you.
The party was wild.
Love you to death.
They really knocked them dead. Imagine this arsenal of tactical nuclear weapons falling into the wrong hands. The Pentagon never did.
4 minutes ahead of schedule. Damn, I'm good.
Now, a team of terrorists have taken over.
Wake up the president.
But there's just one thing they didn't count on. The cook.
Are you like some special forces guy or something?
No, I'm just a cook.
Oh my god, we're gonna die.
Chills. I'm just a cook.
Ah! That's a pretty...
This is not the work of a cook.
I want you to coordinate your efforts with us.
Yes, sir.
I see that you completely disobeyed my orders.
Roger that.
Ryback is an ex-SEAL. Expert in martial arts. Explosives.
Stand back!
Weapons and tactics.
I also cook. The Nimitz is tracking two Tomahawks just launched from the Missouri.
Where are they headed?
Honolulu.
Happy trails.
Steven Seagal.
I know you, don't I?
Tommy Lee Jones.
Been a long time.
I'll see you in hell, Santa Boy!
Under siege.
Real classic, Under Siege. I want to get the box office here because I was stunned by it. Yeah. Budget?
83.
What? 1983?
No, it made 83 million.
No, I have 156.6.
Oh.
30 on a budget of 35 million.
That's pretty good.
Huge, huge hit.
As far as trailers go, when we play these trailers on the podcast, typically it is definitely doesn't live up to the hype. But that trailer, I actually want to see the movie. Like, they did a really good job of pumping up this movie in that trailer.
Yeah, basically you don't really need to see the movie once you see the trailer. Like, you get
that pretty much did it.
You get it all. So what's going on? They're having a party for the Admiral. The Admiral is 85 years old. They're the captain.
He's too old to be running the ship.
Everybody's too old. Do they not know how old people are in the fucking Navy? Like, they're all too old in this movie. Everybody's too old. Steven Seagal's, he's the cook. We're supposed to believe one guy and a couple other guys cook for fucking hundreds of dudes on a battleship.
And by the way, the battleship's called the Missouri, right? And all that information checks out. The Missouri was the battleship that the Japanese surrendered on after we dropped the bomb on them. It was named after Harry Truman's home state.
Right.
And it also did serve Iraq or the first Gulf time War. We invaded Iraq, Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
It all checks out.
Yeah. It's a real thing. I don't think he was really the cook on it. He's supposedly a Cajun. Did you guys catch that? He's like, I gotta make, me a real Louisiana gumbo, and he's like doing a thing. He's like and he tells a Cajun joke. He's like, you know what they say about a Cajun, and he's doing a Cajun accent. But then he just stops.
He just slips out after that scene.
Yeah, it's just like maybe
he practiced for like 3 months for that one scene. He's like, hey, what do you want from me?
Maybe
I gave you my scene.
Yeah, maybe the director was just like, hey, lose the accent. They bring all these people onto the ship to like celebrate the captain, who's, it's a surprise birthday party, and they bring in a band, and Tommy Lee Jones is like with the band, and then the band gets up and starts playing, and there's a singer, and then there's all the instrument guys, but Tommy Lee Jones is on the stage with the band, but he doesn't like have a,
he was supposed to be part of the band.
That's what I'm saying. He's up there with the band, but he doesn't have an actual function in the band other than he's kind of like a hype man. He's kind of like an MC. Yeah.
And he's the least chill musician of all time. He's like super intense.
He is. He's like, I know, man, music is my life. Like, it's a whole thing. You could tell, right? I mean, Gary Busey's not there unless he's up to some shenanigans. So it's not really explained. They're trying to steal Tomahawk missiles, right?
It takes them a long time to reveal what their plan is. A little too long for my taste. I think the actual plot could have probably been given away earlier in some dialogue. So it takes you a little bit to see exactly what these people's deal is. But the song that they're playing in that, whatever that was, that cover band or whatever, was dreadful. And Gary Busey in drag is like one of the more embarrassing things you're going to see in a movie. It was hard to watch.
Really weird. It was really weird.
And I'm not I've never been in the military, but the one thing I'm pretty clear about is they don't really tolerate sass, especially to superiors. And Seagal, right from the jump, is just sassing left and right. He's sassing everybody. Yeah. And even Busey's like, hey, why are you putting up with this shit? The cook is like sassing everybody.
It's
weird.
It is weird. And what's up with everybody's fixation on the kitchen on this ship? Like, they bring on, so they're having a party. Tommy Lee Jones is there emceeing, and then he does that thing where he's like, who's the highest ranking officer here? And they like all point to one guy, and then he whips out a gun and he does that real sweet one-handed, shoots him right directly in the forehead. And then they round up all the sailors and like lock them up or something.
Before or after the dance off to I've Got the Power? When was that?
Oh, that was right after. When Q-Ball, are you talking about when Q-Ball comes in the kitchen?
Yeah. And then they're like, I've got the power. They do that whole dance off scene.
Yeah.
It was the most 1992 moment.
It was real weird. And it kind of made me uncomfortable because there's a black guy called Q-Ball and he comes in the kitchen. And the first thing Steven Seagal is like, let me see you dance, Q-Ball. And I'm like, ooh. Can we, like, is that necessary? And also, why was that scene? Well, we know why the scene was there, and we'll get to that later. But it was a real weird, like, they're, like, dancing at each other in the kitchen. Everybody loves the cook. Does anybody know the cook on a fucking battleship?
They know this cook.
Why is everybody familiar with him? And so he can sass, apparently, because he's, like, the captain's personal chef. And he's like, nobody cooks for the captain but me. He's basically like, he's like, knows him better than anybody else. He's like, the captain don't like surprises and neither do I. And it's like, all right, like, calm down. Like, he has a close relationship with the captain.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I think that he has like, he kind of has fuck you money. He obviously did something for the captain that makes him invincible, so he could sass and do whatever the hell he wants and tell the black cast member to dance. But what you didn't mention is Erica, what's her face, is our only
Eleniak. She was, I believe, she was on Baywatch.
She definitely was. And yeah. I guess what's unclear is she is paid to be a stripper that comes out of a cake.
Yep.
And she flies over with all the bad guys.
Yep.
But she's the only one on the helicopter that isn't in on it. Is that what we're
right. believe? Well, yeah. I mean, Casey Ryback, Steven Seagal, he's got questions that she immediately, his concerns that she immediately allays within one sentence. Because he's like, who are you? Like, he was concerned about that too, but very briefly.
Right. But she, it was a weird kind of a plot thing here, the female. And I did a little bit of digging. And I guess Seagal, she wasn't in the initial script. There wasn't going to be any women.
Oh.
And he handpicked her and said, let's write in a female.
I want to see the fakest tits possible.
They're fake. I wasn't really into that haircut, and I was never into Erica Eleniak the first go around. But I mean, this movie would have been fucking horrendous. I mean, even worse without her. At least there was like,
she was the only part I remembered from when I saw the movie. Yeah. That was the only part I remembered. Yeah.
But she had a great line that took you right back to 1992. She was giving her credits to Seagal, and she said, I was in an episode of Hunter and a Girls Gone Wild video.
It wasn't Girls Gone Wild. Wet and Wild, one of those Playboy DVDs.
She was Miss July of 89. They said it maybe seven times.
Yeah, they did. The only reason she's in the movie is so Seagal could fuck her, right? He saw her on Baywatch. He's like, yes. I want to fuck that girl. Let's make a part for her in this movie, and I'm going to fuck her. And he probably did fuck her.
We didn't mention that a former president was in this movie.
Yeah, George H.W.
George H.W. and Barbara, and I believe I saw Dick Cheney sitting in a chair.
So what do you – can you buy some like – you buy stock footage and just put – because they're known –
That was a strange thing because the actual footage of the president doing the speech was film. So it wasn't like stock video. So it was almost like the actual president did this 50th anniversary of Pearl Harbor on the Missouri. Yep. And they must have just gotten the rights to just film everything as is. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. That they got, maybe they had some access, but they're before they enable their plan. They're real obsessed with the cook. So Gary Busey's got to go down there and like confront Seagal, and he's like, it's like Seagal's making a bouillabaisse. They're baking pies. Like, it looks pretty good, I'll be honest.
By the way, do you guys
garlic know, like, everywhere?
Yeah,
do you lot, guys know so what much garlic. Bouillabaisse is?
Yeah, it's like a fish soup.
Is it? Okay, he says he's got to make 50 gallons of bouillabaisse for this party.
Yeah,
And I'm thinking that's probably what he makes for himself on Sunday nights now. 50 gallons.
Yeah, that's just for him. He's like, everybody else going to eat? he's sassing Gary Busey, who's the second in command on the ship.
By the way, did you notice how Busey pronounced Hawaii like eight times? Hawaii.
Oh, he does the Hawaii.
He was doing the Hawaii.
Whoa. Wow. It's usually only people that are from Hawaii that pronounce it that way.
Busey clearly had recently had sex with a Hawaiian person.
Definitely on location. He's bitching about the condition of the kitchen or the food. And he makes a comment that I thought was very strange. He said, it smells like a lard omelet. What the fuck is that? That's not even a thing. Like, what? You just made up a thing that doesn't have a smell because it's never existed. It's very strange.
Seagal wrote, I think he put his touches on this movie.
Yeah, he definitely did. Hey, Jay Stu, is there a way that when you're not speaking, you could like take your hand and like wrap it around the microphone?
What happened? Are you guys hearing feedback?
Yeah. Yep. Do that.
It just sounds like he's about to go, today is a day that will live in infamy.
Yeah. So just take your hand off it when you go to speak, and then we'll be good. Thank you. Okay.
So and then he spits in the spits in the bouillabaisse.
Yeah.
And then they throw him in the brig, right? Or no, they throw him in the freezer.
But first, Steven Seagal decks him and then like starts kicking everybody's ass for some reason because he's down to let go of the fisticuffs. And then he's like, oh, hey, okay. And then he stops and they lock him in the meat locker. Or they go, throw him in the brig. And Steven Seagal, who's got an answer for everything, is like, nobody goes to the brig without the captain's signature. And then he's like, Gary Busey's like, oh, fuck, he got me. Dude, you're about to fucking start murdering half the people on the ship. Like, just kill him. Or just put him in the fucking brig and say, hey, we'll deal with it later. You're going to murder the captain in the next scene anyway. You're worried about a signature? So they lock him in the meat locker, but not before, and forgive me, not before, I'm just quoting a movie here, Gary Busey says, you hit like a faggot.
Oh. No. Yeah, I think he says, now I know why you're a cook, because you hit like a faggot. And I'm thinking, that must have been the first time and the last time it's ever been used in a movie, right? That's a deplorable line, and you can't put talk it in any
like
movie.
That. You can't talk like that. I was concerned, so Tommy Lee Jones, he's like really going face-to-face with Erica Eleniak before the, like telling her what she's going to do. And all I could think about, Ed, was that buddy of yours that did like shot a commercial or something with Tommy Lee Jones. And how did he describe Tommy Lee Jones' breath?
Could knock a buzzard off a shit wagon.
Yeah, that's it. He's got breath that could knock a buzzard off a shit wagon. And that really was stressing me out as it can sometimes.
Yes. I do know that feeling. He has several close talking moments.
Yeah.
And you can't help but think about the breath.
Yeah. Ever since you told me that, how much Budweiser he likes to drink and they're face to face in the chopper, right? They're coming in on the chopper and then, you know, they're in port. They're in Hawaii. These guys get to leave the ship. It's not like they've been at war, but they come in. Erica Eleniak, the only female in the movie, there's like a female like attaché to one of the officers. Erica Eleniak gets off the helicopter, and it is like the most gang rapey vibes I've ever seen.
Feels like the back room of the accused.
All of the sailors basically start coming and like falling on the ground and rubbing their genitals, and it's like, They're like all gonna just like go crazy. Like they'd never seen a woman before. Like, she's attractive, but you guys haven't been like in prison. You're just in the Navy. You get to leave the boat sometimes. Like it was a really like very disturbing. It was like the first time they'd ever seen a woman. We talked about this. What's Tommy Lee Jones's job in the band? So the fight starts breaking out, right? The whole ship is made of metal. And these guys just start willy-nilly discharging Uzis like in the fucking cafeteria. Does that make sense? Wouldn't the bullets like bounce around and just start like, couldn't they bounce back and hit your guys? Like they didn't seem to care. Did that strike you guys as odd?
In some movies, it's ricocheting all over the place. Yeah. And then other movies, it isn't.
Yes.
Again, I don't think there was a lot of technical advisor work. And
also the noise. Like if you discharge a machine gun in a small metal room, like later when Steven Seagal gets the jump on the guys that come down to the meat locker and he relocks them in the meat locker, they shoot their way out of the meat locker. Those guys are deaf. Had he not stabbed them in the throat, those guys would be deaf. Like they would have blown out their eardrums just from the sound. I had a question. How do these bad guys decide who to murder? Because some people, they're like, they shoot the captain in the chest. They shoot the high ranking officer right in the middle of the forehead. And then some people, they're like, hey, oh, hold on. Okay, don't move. You're coming with me. And then just like a regular guy, well, just shoot him. Like, what? How come some guys you can murder and some guys you got to be like really careful with? I didn't get that. Did you guys?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very, you're right. It was very willy nilly. And what I think it was Colomini
who, yeah.
You know, when he was in this movie, he probably thought, there's no way I'm going to be in a movie with a worse script than this. And then he was in Con Air a few years later.
That's right. Coming off that big.
I like Con Air, but not for the same reasons that the dialogue for Colomini was designed.
Yes.
But he checked out. Was it his job to check out everybody? And then he didn't check out the chef?
No, that was Gary Busey.
Oh, that was Busey.
Because the chef's file was kept in the captain's quarters, apparently, while everyone else is... So
much chef-related stuff.
I know. So much chef-related stuff. Also, if the chef were an ex-Navy SEAL, which is an insane premise in and of itself, because a SEAL... You know, they have lucrative careers after being SEALs in the private sector. But assuming a guy retires from being a SEAL and then becomes a chef on the boat, don't you think everyone on the boat would know that immediately? Wouldn't that be like the biggest rumor on the ship?
Right. Do you hear about that chef? He used to be a Navy SEAL. Yeah. And then when he was booted, instead of making him go be a chef at like Denny's, they said, you know what, let's put you as close to the action as possible.
I think the explanation that they did give, and it was half-assed towards the end, was what? That he had done something that got him court-martialed or something.
Right.
And it was one of those things where he did the right thing, but the wrong thing. And the captain of the ship, as opposed to, like, I don't know, giving him a desk job or something to live out his... tenure or whatever before pension, he just made him the cook of this ship. But they kept referring to him as a cook.
Yeah.
Those stupid lines in the locker room. Yeah. He must have said the word cook 8 times with the woman.
It's great.
They established cook 19 times in the initial scene, and the captain was really vague about, you know, he's more than a cook and all this stuff. But I you're right. I don't understand that how focused they were on this occupation. Even in the trailer, I was listening, and they mentioned the word cook like 19 times.
No, it's really crazy.
Was there an explanation on why Busey had to get in drag during the show?
Very confusing. Like
it's one thing if that was creating a distraction, but he just needed to parade around in a skirt and like fake tits as he just walked to the captain's like quarters.
Oh, I think it was all a setup and it was stupid. Like they were hosting this party like they weren't about to start willy-nilly murdering all the rank and file on the ship. They were acting like it was a real thing. So he dresses up in drag, but I think that they did all that to set up the one line where he's in the captain's quarters reading his own file, reading his own like employee reports, and he's like, do I look like the captain had written that he needed a psychological evaluation? And he's like, do I look like I need a psychological evaluation? And he's got like lipstick. He actually has, if you watch, he actually has more lipstick on throughout the entire movie when he's not dressed in drag. The guy is, his lips are so greased and pink the whole time. It was like over the top. Yeah.
I don't know where this shows up, but I wrote down the quote, SEAL Team 5 is the best there ever are.
Yeah.
I was thinking, was that like a thing? And then they're like, well, how about SEAL Team 6?
Step up.
Like, that's the only SEAL team I know of.
We got to step up. Yeah, there's only one SEAL team that you're aware of, and that's 6. You got to.
Well, how about 6 minute abs? How about 7 minutes? Right?
8 minutes. How? How do you think the guys on like SEAL Team 2 feel? Like they're like, hey, we do badass shit too. That's just because Osama bin Laden isn't involved when we do it, or Captain Ron, who's the Tom Hanks captain that they saved?
Oh, I'm the captain now. Phillips.
Captain Phillips. You know, yeah, they
SEAL Team 1 probably goes to like Six Flags incidents and yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yes. they're probably pissed that the SEAL Team 6 guys are all a bunch of fucking glory hogs, and SEAL Team 4 probably does badass shit too, and they don't get any credit. Yeah. What else? Oh.
Do you guys know what the movie reference is? It must have been some kind of an ode to a former movie or a TV show, right? Because why would the cook say at least three times, I noticed three times, he would tell the young sergeant or what have you outside his meat locker, you've got shit for brains, Private. It sounds familiar. Is that like an ode to a movie or a TV show or something?
Shit for brains is definitely was a big phrase in the 90s.
He said it three times.
He said, you got shit for brains, Private. He kept saying that over and over again. I was just wondering if that was some kind of a inside joke or a testament to something. I don't even know what it was.
Yeah, it was very common movie parlance in the time.
And you have to remember that anything that Seagal punches up, it's not going to be actually clever.
No.
It's you're right. It was, you know, whatever he did was definitely stolen from something else, whether it's just the common vernacular or like he took it from a line. But, you know, Seagal is not going to come up with a clever line.
No, definitely not.
And it sounds like the ship is getting slaughtered above them. And Steven Seagal is, for whatever reason, real concerned about his pies overcooking.
Yeah.
Well, the guy's a conscientious cook.
Yeah, he is.
I like the scene where they only show close-ups because there's no way he could have swung his legs around to get out of that handcuff situation.
Yes.
They just show like a close-up of boots because seeing him do a somersault would have been too much.
Well, and that was that's where he was in the meat locker where there was so much garlic. There was just sticks and sticks of garlic hanging in there.
Yeah, it must have been. They were thinking maybe it'd be a vampire movie. There was just garlic hanging everywhere.
Well, you know how like when something's real smelly in the fridge, like you're worried like it could make the other food taste like that. Does everything just taste so much like garlic? Because also there's like sides of beef. There's like whole pigs. You know they cut that shit up before they deliver it to the ship. Why are we always in movies having like whole cows hung up places? And this ship had a whole bunch of half cows hanging in the thing, and so much garlic. You don't need to refrigerate garlic. Yeah. It doesn't need to be in the meat locker.
Well, there was a ton of garlic outside the meat locker too. There's just garlic everywhere. Again, it's because they didn't consult anyone.
Yeah.
Because like you said, they're going to cut it up. They're not going to leave these giant slabs of beef. Like the military is all about precision and efficiency. And this is just like everything is sloppy here.
No, it's crazy. Yeah. Erica Leniak supposedly sleeps through. She's in the cake, you know, so she's supposed to jump out of a cake.
Yeah.
She sleeps through the whole firefight because Gary Busey.
She's got narcolepsy.
Yeah, no, Gary Busey gives her roofies.
Oh.
And so she's apparently passed out in the cake. But then just out of nowhere, she just jumps out of the cake. Like, how does she know it's the right time?
Yeah, I don't think roofies work that way, that it just has you, like, you have, like, a power hour of nap.
Yeah.
And then you're fully functional and ready to shoot semi-automatic, and the whole explanation of what a semi-automatic weapon is.
Oh yeah. So then she jumps out of the cake. There's no one. There's dead people in the room with her, and she still does her dance and like shows her tits and stuff. There's like none of the party is not going on. She would realize that in 1 second, but she had to show those implants. That was part of the contract. Then he's like, They partner up. She's going to help him. He gives her a gun lesson. He doesn't even show her the gun. He's like, yeah, you're going to be firing an MP4 and it's got a double click mechanism on it. And so what I want you to do is when you go to shoot it, just click, you know, just one bullet every time. It's like, Dude, show her the gun. Is she in the military? She doesn't know how to fire a gun.
Is that where she says, I've got two rules? One, I don't date musicians.
Yeah.
And two, I don't kill people.
Yeah, that is.
That's a weird rule for a stripper.
Well, yeah. And
at some point, she finds a gear, though, because they made her out to be this complete ditz, of course. She plays the typical movie blonde in the 80s and 90s who is more disruptive and gets in the way more. But at some point in the movie, she becomes very well versed in military weaponry and strategy. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
She's teaching the guys that they rescued how to shoot and shit. And she's calling out actual like military jargon. Somehow the steep learning curve became very easy.
Yeah. Miklo from Blood and Blood Out's a real pussy. He's like, hey man, I only do the laundry. I'm not going out to fight. And she's like, I'll come. And he's like, okay, tell me, like, he's still doing the accent kind of from Blood and Blood Out. He's like, okay, tell me how to shoot a gun then. And she's like, she's like, okay, here's how you cock it. Like, she's like a full expert on it. This guy's in the fucking Navy. He only does the laundry, but still, he has to have some training. So they partner up, and he's this is another thing you can't. This is subtle, and you can't do it in movies anymore. Where he's like, this is an MK-27 comms device, satellite link up, only used by the SEALs, and she's like. So, like a car phone, which is a pretty good layman's explanation. Yeah, it's a phone.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, you fucking dumb idiot bitch. Yeah, it's a fucking car phone. Shut the fuck up, you stupid fucking woman.
Let me mansplain.
Yeah, it's like everything she goes to say is like the stupidest fucking thing anyone could ever say because she's female. And it's like, actually, that is a pretty good explanation of the device that you're using. It's a car phone. You're calling somebody from it. Yeah.
You're only in this movie for your fake tits.
Yes. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Then what was SEAL Team? Getting back to that. What was SEAL Team 5's plan? Because, like, remember when, and I know this is a long time before, but I don't feel like the military tactics have increased that much. But remember when we went and got Osama bin Laden, they flew in with two stealth helicopters. The technology of which has still never been divulged. We didn't even know we had those. They flew in with two stealth helicopters. They had dogs. They had built a schematic of the compound where they had practice. If you can't get through this one door, we're going to blow up this other wall over here. Like they knew, and I get that they had more time to practice. But the whole thing about stealth or the whole thing about the SEALs is that they're fucking stealthy. They sneak up on your ass. They fucking switch.
They're training. That's what a SEAL is. I mean, they're trying to find the best, most stealthy guys.
Yeah. So they're like, we're sending in the SEAL team. They fly directly towards a fully armed battleship in a fucking Black Hawk. And somebody walks out on the deck with an RPG and just fucking shoots it out of the sky.
It's almost like the plan should have been to use that helicopter that was approaching the deck as a decoy for actual Navy SEALs that were jumping out of a plane, diving under the water.
That's right. We're on like little ship.
But the actual SEALs were on this helicopter slowly approaching the ship. Like this was their big plan.
Yeah, it was. It's just in it, like, and then they're like, "Oh well, I guess we got to blow it up." like that was their one shot to just fly directly towards a fucking battleship with guns and missiles and like everything on it. And then they're like, "Well, that didn't work. We'll just drop a bomb on it, I guess." They did the same thing with the F-18. I forgot about that part. They're like, "Hey, let's go take a look with the F-18," and the F-18 flies real close, and they just blow it away with the 50 cal. Like, what? How does that happen? It's crazy.
But maybe that's why we only know of SEAL Team 6 because SEAL Team 5,
bunch of dummies. That's the ones they send in to get killed.
The Benny Hill unit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wackity sacks.
Yeah.
So the whole time, you know, they do that like cliched thing, almost kind of like even Austin Powers did it, where there's just a massive war room with a huge round desk and all the important generals and politicians in it. And then the advisor, we find out that Tommy Lee Jones' character was a member of the CIA who I guess compromised a mission or didn't follow through. So they sent somebody to kill him.
Yeah.
And this is their this is his big thing, that he's going to take revenge and he's going to steal these nuclear missiles on the ship and put it on a Korean nuclear sub that he just so happened to steal.
That was that was a little confusing.
Was that the scene where he was also carving meat and throwing it to guys so they could like eat it with their hands?
Yeah. Yeah, that was that wasn't really well explained. Also, because when they rendezvous with the sub, very calm seas, I noticed. Not much swell that day. Like, they're just like the boat and the sub are right next to each other and they're both sitting completely still, not like bumping into each other, not an issue. And then the cap,
I noticed that.
Yeah.
I noticed that it must have been that the sound stage was obvious. All these movies use it, but Seagal just can't jump into the water and swim right over to something that's 30 feet away in the ocean, in the actual ocean.
No.
But on the sound stage, he was able to just kind of glide over there.
Right, with a gun. He had no flippers either. So he slides down the anchor chain and then swims. Luckily, it's very calm seas that night. And then he swims from the battleship to the submarine. But the submarine captain he sounds Russian, but then all the other guys are like Italian. He's like, "Hey, Luigi, rigatoni, lasagna, parmesan, what's the matter for you?" It's like a Sopranos. It's like they were at the Bing all of a sudden. I'm like, wait, who are these people? Like,
Silvio.
And this is a lot. This is a movie we discussed, Jason. I don't know if you did this one with us. I think you might have. The Rock.
Yes.
What is?
I did not. I was Con Air.
Con Air. What is in it for the henchmen?
Right. It was kind of the same thing.
Yes.
The Rock came after this, so The Rock sampled this movie.
Totally.
I'm going to be a traitor to my country.
Yes.
At least there was a specific dollar amount for the. For the Rock henchmen,
yeah.
This there didn't seem to be any sort of compensation. It wasn't like we need $80 million to split up among my henchmen.
Well, at one point, I think he says to Gary Busey, "What are you going to do with your $200 million?" Which is, hey,
oh, he does.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. But these are the top. That's the top guys. What they have a big team. What are the lower level guys getting? And then my answer would be, hey, what are you doing with your $200 million? I'm gonna die in prison because this is like, I'm. What am I doing? I'm robbing. I'm committing treason. I'm robbing the United States Navy of Tomahawk missiles. Like,
don't get you.
They're not gonna find you. Are you gonna go to a different planet because you're not gonna disappear on this one? Like, what's the end game there? It's a suicide mission.
That was completely unexplained. So there was like 5 to 6 nuclear warheads, right? And they seemingly were doing the reach out, the outreach, and the negotiating for the price on the ship after they got the warheads. Tommy Lee Jones is talking to some, I don't know, probably Russian representative about the cost. And as a leverage tool, he said, "Hey, if you don't take this price, we're just going to call Mohammed."
Right. Also, their code was Looney Tunes, and he's like, "Hey, Wile E. Coyote calling, where's Tweety Bird?" It's like, I don't think the people from other countries get the references in the same way as we do. Maybe just like talk normally. I don't think it matters because you're on a secure frequency anyways, as they told us. I thought that was kind of weird. One thing I did like is that Steven Seagal, he did some knife training. He definitely had like a knife coach for this.
Where he murked that guy, threw it in his neck.
He threw it in his neck, and there's two times this happened. He threw the knife in that guy's neck, and then when they came down to like check the kitchen for him, the guy's clearly dead, but for some reason they took his pulse anyway. And they like felt for his pulse like around the knife, which was through his carotid artery. And they did the same thing with the captain. The captain was all like gutted. They like shot him so many times in the chest, and he was sitting there dead. And also, he was old enough to almost die anyway, but they still, when they walked in, they checked his pulse too, just to be sure. I thought that was funny. But he got in a lot of knife fights, including the one in the climax with Tommy Lee Jones, where they knife battle each other.
That probably could have been what, 2 minutes shorter?
I mean, it
was like a lot of posturing and a lot of quick hand movements, but not a whole lot of action. And then just to get to that point, I mean, we're all over the place here, but like to have the bad guy being able to kill Seagal if he wants it, but he opts to have Seagal watch it all on TV. And then he ends up, of course, getting close enough so Seagal could kick the gun out of his hand.
Yeah.
Just a complete clumsy way to approach that climactic scene. It was horrendous.
Also, just shoot him. Just kill him.
Yes. Yes.
Cole Meany also has a clear shot at him. So when he dives from one ship to other, he puts a bomb on the submarine. And he also is swimming with like a 9mm in his hand, like having a gun battle from the middle of the ocean with the guys on the submarine. And then they're like, they throw like an anchor. Yeah. They throw like an anchor and they pull it up and it's got like a little bit of neoprene on it. And they're like, oh, we got him. Or they're like high fiving each other. Like, woo, got him. Told you I'd get him with this anchor.
But you're right. That guy had a clean shot at him. But as is in most movies, the bad guy always thinks that having a real smart cutting verbal line before they kill the guy beats just killing him. So, of course, he had to deliver the witty line. And then the female, the person that had no idea how to do anything militarily when she got on the boat, she was against killing people. She saves the day and saves our good guy.
Yep. She walks up behind him.
Colin Meany, right?
Yeah. Yep. It was really
there was one scene where Seagal just suddenly had a soldering iron and protective goggles. Where do you just find the goggles as you're scrambling around a ship?
No, he MacGyvered together some bomb, and that's what I was thinking, because he had to swim it over there, so he put it in like a Tupperware. And also he had a rubber, like one of the ingredients to the bomb was a condom, and he like put a condom over a thing and then like wrapped it with tape. And I'm like, you don't know how to do this. You haven't been to bomb making school.
Along the way, he had to dump honey out of the warhead too. It was the strangest scene. But what Ed's referring to is when he had to break those guys out of wherever they were, rescue them out of the hatch or whatever.
Yeah.
And he really needed those tools and the goggles, and they were right there, ready to go.
Oh yeah.
But you know, if you were, you could sort of explain like, oh, he found this and he's just going to close his eyes and do his best. But he suddenly has the perfect goggles for the exact moment.
Also, did anybody understand the rigging system that they were using? They were cutting rebar, or they were cutting steel beams to make an offloading system for the Tomahawk missiles. And he goes into him and the guys go in and they kill all the guys like in the machine shop that are making the track or whatever that they're making. And they have steel beams and they're like carrying them like they weigh 4 pounds. And they're just like, I'm pretty sure you can't cut a steel beam with a bandsaw. They're just like, it's like, no, it's like made out of butter or something. Were they making it into like a chute? Because then when they show them offloading them. It's like a crane thing that would be on the ship anyway, right? Like, they have to get the missiles on and off the ship somehow.
Their plan was to bring all the beams to create some kind of a seamless transporting thing. And then when they realized that those beams were compromised, like, the most memorable death in the entire movie is a ridiculously slow one. Like, the poor guy that got killed by the beam that Seagal just kind of loosened or cut the rope on, and then he looks up and the beam comes down and kills him.
Yeah.
The slowest moving death since Austin Powers. When the steamroller killed that guy.
How about the fact that Tommy Lee Jones, his plan goes awry when the chef is, or the cook is, fucking shit up. And yet he wants to complete, and he's sweating a lot. He's completing all his action wearing the leather jacket that has been bedazzled the whole time. He's wearing his t-shirt underneath. Yeah. When you're sweating and moving around, I feel like that bulky jacket with the bedazzler is not the way to go.
Yeah, and isn't that just a costume? I mean, it is. It is.
Right. He's not really a rocker.
Right. It is December, and they are, because in the beginning, they're in Hawaii. And this, where we probably should have paid more attention to this. In the beginning, they're in Hawaii. And then they sail for, 10 minutes. And then they anchor. And then everything happens. And then at the end, they're sailing up to the Golden Gate Bridge.
Which appeared in The Rock.
Right.
It's all coming full circle.
Right. I feel like it would have taken at least several days to sail from Hawaii to San Francisco.
Right. And most of this movie, the ship's not moving.
No, it stops. It stops for an extended, for most of the movie. Right. And they hadn't, not long after they'd left when it stops. What else?
Did you guys also find Gary Busey's death was just kind of anticlimactic?
Yes.
Like, Gary Busey gets on the sub, and I guess somehow they got all the nuclear weapons on it somehow. They just kind of glossed over that.
Yeah.
And then he's like, we're out of here. We're done. No more Rygar, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
And then Seagal just like reminds everybody, we're on a gunship. Like, there are guns that we could shoot at that submarine over there that has nuclear weapons on.
There's a World War II veteran there, unexplained. And they're like, he's like, hey, we still, these cannons are still operational. And he's like, we still have the rounds that go in them. What? Like, there's like, they bomb the ship. They bomb the submarine with the big like 50 millimeter cannons guns on the deck. And they're like shooting at it, and they kind of like miss at first. And Gary Busey's like, don't worry about it. That's just starburst that they got over there. They can't do anything to hurt us. Well, anything that gets shot out of a fucking giant cannon that hits you will kill you. Like, it doesn't matter if it's not, because they're like, we don't have the armor piercing rounds. I'm like, what are you talking about? Those things fucking destroy buildings. Like, what? Of course it would kill them if it hit them. And then, yeah, Jason, they bomb the ship. Of course, Steven Seagal's an expert on that too. So he's like, 20, he's looking through the scope. He's like, yeah, 20 heading 24 niner by set. Like, he knows how to do that. And then they need the old guy that was in World War II on the ship for some reason to show him how to do it. But then they bomb the submarine. First of all, Fukushima, anyone? Like, we're fucking poisoning our ocean with nuclear material.
All our fish are fucked up now.
Yeah, we're all, the whole ocean's fucked now because they blew up some nuclear warheads. And also, here's your bad guy from the movie, and this is how he dies. Like, you're hiring Gary Busey. You should have him do a fucking death scene.
Yeah, right.
A real one, like Angelo in Point Break. Oh yeah,
a Die Hard type thing,
Mr. Joshua.
But you have the two key deaths in Die Hard. You have falling off the building or the ballet dancer guy.
Exactly.
You know, you have two key deaths. Here, they're like, ah, fuck it, and he dies. That's how they work.
Yeah.
I will say this, too, like, and what's her face? The blonde ditz was doing a lot. Erica Liniak was doing a lot of jargon during that gunship, during that that submarine blast thing. She was yelling out jargon. She was ordering people around. Somehow, within a couple of hours, she has learned like nautical Navy jargon in order to handle all this. And then the weird subplot too was when they turned the sprinklers on in this room that obviously it would take 50 days of
sprinklers to drown. They're gonna drown the whole crew. This is a good point. They're like, hey, here's a way we flush them out. We're going to drown the whole crew with the fire sprinklers in this room. It would take weeks to, like, you would need a fire hose to fill that room with water. What were you going to say, Jason?
They were never in danger.
Like, ever?
I never got the feeling.
Yes, yeah.
In danger of having wet socks, which is a pretty terrible feeling.
It's the worst feeling.
But, I mean, death? No.
No, it was that whole thing was an insane turn of events.
No, nothing's more insane than the final scene.
So
when they're in San Francisco.
Yeah, they're in San Francisco. Erica Eleniak is in uniform for some reason. She's not in the Navy. You know what?
We're enrolling. She's just going to pass all the training steps. She's a full on midshipman now.
And Steven Seagal, Casey Ryback, his whole thing at the beginning is I don't get in uniform. Like they're like, hey, you got to be on deck in your uniform for the ceremony for the captain. And he's like, you better ask the captain if I got to get in my uniform because everybody knows I don't wear my uniform. Then at the end, they're like
saluting.
Yeah, they're like having a burial at sea for the captain. Did you maybe want to let his family know? Like, what's going on? And Seagal's in his full fucking hat and everything. He's all fucking Erica Eleniak is in the military. Like, everybody's got their uniforms on.
She's just one of the guys now. Like, she's just part of a row of like dozens of midshipmen. Yes.
Like, but I think kind of a slap in the face. Yes, Jason.
They kind of gave away why Seagal wanted her cast and everything, right? So they go full circle with the cue ball, right? So at the beginning of the movie, he tells cue ball to dance, and then cue ball at the end of the movie says, "Hey Ryback, you got to move."
Yes.
And he says, "What did he say? I got one move," and he starts making out.
Yes.
With the Eleniak.
He fucking
got one move, mouth raping. He grabs her by the back of the head and just jams his mouth into her.
He starts mouth sexing her, and it's like there has not been any flirtation. There was no hand holding. There was no indication at all anywhere in the movie that there was some kind of a romantic relationship.
There wasn't like that one scene where they're sharing their feelings, like back to Die Hard, where he and Al, the cop, they had some time where they're just discussing their lives.
Yeah.
There's nothing like that. They're just scrambling around the boat, and then he just grabs the back of her skull and is like, I'm getting in there.
Yeah.
And just smashes her.
If anything, Miklo from Blood In, Blood Out, he was trying to get it in. He's like, hey, I'll just stay here with the girl. And he's like looking her up and down the whole time. Like, there's a little bit of flirtation there. But
yeah, Casey, he would have been like, you know, Blood In, Blood Out?
Yeah.
I'm about to go penis in, penis out. Let's go.
Yeah. How about come in, come out? Yes.
And think fluids. About it.
Yeah.
Think about it. Like I said, she had become like one of the best, what do you call it, soldiers by the end of the movie. Yeah. She really liked this thing.
Yeah.
And if any feeling that she earned that uniform on merit was just thrown away by that kiss. Like,
yes,
he did her such a disservice. There was no romance at all leading up to the entire movie, and then at the end when she's like one of the guys and she earned this by winning this battle with them, then he makes out with her and they're like, oh, that's why she's
yeah, exactly. It was a real slap in the face. Plus They've been doing this mission for a couple days now. I didn't see anybody fucking brush their teeth. I didn't see any floss happening. Their mouths had to be disgusting.
Oh, yeah. They all must have smelled.
Yes. Musty. Here's another thing I forgot to mention. At one point, they're like Tommy Lee Jones and his guys are like getting ready to like shoot off a missile or something. And Steven Seagal's like, oh, I could just flick this one switch and turn off the power to everything. Why did he do that first?
Yeah, that was convenient when he did that. That was real convenient though.
Right. And Tommy Lee Jones is like, which is what the bad guy always does. He pulls a gun on the guy that's supposedly working for him. And he's like, hey, turn the power back on or I'll shoot you. And the guy is like 65 years old. If I know my tech guys, usually the older, the better. It's not the young kids that understand how to work computers. It's always the very old, much older gentlemen that are the best on the laptops.
And how about this? And maybe if we have any Navy SEALs listening, they can
tweet
at us.
Yeah,
Navy SEALs I know are the best of the best. Physically, they are trained killers. They know a lot of military tactics and strategy. People
withstand the elements,
and they execute within the elements. But like, I didn't know that they also knew everything there was to know about how to run a gunship and to handle nuclear weapons.
He knew everything.
Not only does he know how to turn off the power to this massive gunship, but he knows how to do the actual missiles to fire at the sub. And then at the end, he's right there at the coding machine.
Yep.
where the generals tell him how to blow up the missiles that are heading for Honolulu.
Yeah,
he does everything.
Yes, I need to talk with some people at the Pentagon because their systems, they're like, hey, they've launched two Tomahawk missiles directly at Honolulu. And they're like, okay, well, do we have the destruct codes? And they're like, ooh, the destruct codes are actually only on the ship. Huh? That's your system? And then the F-18 shoots down one Tomahawk missile, and they're like, the other one got through. We'll follow it. Just go where it is. Like, what, you found the first one. Like, why can't you follow it? And then the missile is like taking the scenic route. It's like flying towards land, and it's like, ooh, how about I go up the coast a little bit? And it's like flying along the coastline. Like, what?
Yeah. And also, that wasn't Honolulu. That looked like Molokai. That was the leprechaun. There was nobody there.
I'm like, just let it crack. Like, they're like, a million people melted within 10 minutes. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that is not true. Like, that doesn't exist. Yeah. Yeah. It was about to hit a place with no buildings. Let it hit there. It'll be fine. Might kill some wild pigs.
I've got a tough question for both of you. What was the craziest scene? What is the most unrealistic scene in this movie?
I mean, I got to go with the mouth sexing.
Right. Her reaction would not be happy to have him do it.
So weird.
I'm on the fence between when he's in the knife fight with Tommy Lee Jones, he snatches snatches it like a buccaneer.
Yes,
and then
does.
Tommy Lee Jones is like, I'm powerless. You got my best move.
Yes.
And then he's like, and then I'll take my knife and mash you in the skull.
Yes. He bites the knife out of his hand.
Yeah, like a buccaneer.
Yeah.
But blade's side. He bites side. And I'm thinking,
he doesn't even cut the side of his lip.
I was going to say, wouldn't he look like Joker for the rest of the entire movie?
Yes.
Exactly. And the other one, Brian, you pointed out before. So she gets roofied. She bursts out of the cake. There's no music playing. There's nobody in the room. And she's gyrating and stripping. And there's just nobody around but dead bodies.
Yeah, there's dead bodies in the room.
But there's stuff. I mean, even if you just think, all right, roofie just makes you sleep longer. She's gyrating and dancing around, and there's nobody there but dead bodies.
She takes her top off. She disrobes in a striptease dance for literally no audience other than a couple dead bodies.
Like, I don't know what if you look up the definition of gratuitous boobies in a movie, that's it. Like, there was no reason why we needed to see her tits in that moment.
No, it was insane.
Because there was no sexual scene.
No.
Until he grabs her skull.
Crazy. Actually crazy. What else? Is there anything? Have we done it all?
I think we've done it all. Yeah.
What happens in the I didn't see the sequel. I just saw the poster.
It's a train,
So it's just him on a train, or is she with them, or do you know anything about it?
I don't
know. There's some I remember, because you know, this was just prime zone of just needing to see tits whenever I could.
Yeah.
That I think it's a different hot woman of the day. And I think also he has a daughter. There's some element of like there's a daughter that he needs to protect that's on the train with him.
Isn't there like an environmental catastrophe?
He's an environmental agent out to uncover some government thing or what have you, some kind of terrorist, environmental terrorist or something. It looks like Katherine Heigl is the
That's his daughter.
His daughter. Okay.
She's like 12 in that movie.
On a Colorado. Oh, it's his niece. Casey Ryback hops on a Colorado to LA train to start a vacation with his niece. They fucking got airplanes in 1995. You know how long that would take in a train?
Jonathan Banks is one of the bad guys.
Oh,
he was a great bad.
Yeah.
He was a great character actor until he became famous with Breaking Bad.
Yeah, he was very good as the henchman in Beverly Hills Cop, and also the same age then as he is now, 70.
Eric Bogosian was the main.
He's a good heavy. He's a good bad guy.
Yeah,
and then you have Clarence Boddicker. There's lots of good. Guys in that one.
Who's the chick in it though? It doesn't even say.
It looks. If I'm guessing by the headshot, it's this one woman.
Right. Brenda Backe or
I was thinking Sandy Taylor, I think, is I think so.
Yeah. Okay, let's wrap it up. Excellent job, guys. Jason, fantastic work on your end, particularly in the sound department.
Thanks, guys. Mm-hmm. I wanted to take it back to the 1940s,
right.
You know, since it was the 50th anniversary of Pearl Harbor.
I dig it. For Ed Daly and Jason Stewart, my name is Brian Beckner. This has been episode 375 of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Yes, the lifestyle's baller. Podcast getting bigger and not smaller. Broadcasting weekly, that's what we do. With Easy Ed Daily and a man Jay Stu and Brian Beckner, quick to dissect the week in sports and culture and whatever. My brothers reviewing some movies and shows and others. Top podcast, man, no one is above us. 5-star, even the haters will love us. And we're not trying to talk politics a lot. We'd much rather talk about dicks a lot. Shit so hot, man, you know the shit's on top. Top podcast, man, it really hits the spot. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is so flawless. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is for all us. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller.